You found the number one internet site for irreverent, cool, and entertaining talk programming. It's LA Talk Radio. We say what we want.
You're listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Start your workday off right with the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com.
Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez. Thank you, Linda O'Brien. It's Friday, May 17th, 9 o'clock Pacific. Thank you so much for joining us. If you're joining us live, you know, you just go to latalkradio.com, channel 2, click to listen now, and that's how you can hear us live, whether you're at your computer or on your mobile device if you've downloaded the free apps. We also are on iTunes, and then later on in the day, we post the podcast to mariasanchezshow.com and themariasanchezshow.com so you can listen on demand and you can download and listen whenever possible. We do appreciate you following us. On the program this morning, happening right now, we have the largest cycling event in America ongoing. It is the Amgen Tour of California, presented by AEG. And just a little bit, we have the Senior Vice President of AEG and the Executive Director of the Amgen Tour of California, she is one and the same, visiting with us to talk about that. And later on this hour, we have Dr. Sneezer. He had a study published, it came out yesterday in the Journal of Psychological Science, and I was going to share it with you, and I thought, nah, let's get the man who is the co-author of it to speak with us about it. So he's going to join us later on. The supposition that they've been able to found is that men who are physically strong are more likely to take a right-wing political stance, while weaker men are inclined to support the welfare state. So he's going to speak with us about that, which is interesting. They didn't find any significance with women, but they did with men. And before we get into the top stories of the day, normally my commute to the studios, which are here in Sherman Oaks, which is in the San Fernando Valley, I guess you could say, which is in Los Angeles, Southern California, state of California, in case you're listening outside of our area, takes about 40 to 45 minutes. Last week, one day, it took over an hour because of the rain. And as you know, traffic in Los Angeles can be horrific. So because it's Friday light, which I can't always depend on, I always leave my home at the same time. I'm up at 5:30 doing prep, and then I leave my home at 7:15 after a quick shower. And so I got here early, and I thought, what the heck? I'm going to go to Starbucks. I'm not a daily coffee consumer, not because I don't like the flavor and the aroma. It's because I don't do well with the caffeine. I went on a caffeine-free existence. I've never been even a daily caffeine consumer ever in my life. But about 3 years ago, my body was kind of like not responding to the exercise and the protein and the resources that I was supplying it with. So I went to a physician, and she says, you have adrenal fatigue, and caffeine exacerbates that. So, you know, take it out. So I took it out. It didn't help anything. In the meantime, it turned out to be stress-related. So once I got those stressors out of my life, wow, suddenly my body responded, and I was back to my normal. So I intermittently will have caffeine, and today I thought, well, I'll treat myself to caffeine. So there's a Starbucks around the corner from the studios. I get in the damn line. I stand there like a zombie, like everybody else, shuffling. It was a 15-minute experience just to get the cup of coffee, so I don't think I'm going to do that again. But in the news today, of course, the IRS is, Steve Miller is being debriefed somewhat, although it's contentious and I don't see many answers coming through, but I guess they have to do what they have to do regarding the Internal Revenue Service. And apparently today, not through his testimony, but they're saying that there was also not just unjustified targeting of Tea Party and other conservative groups, but also the Hispanic community. George Rodriguez, former president of the San Antonio Tea Party, says that when their organization applied for nonprofit status, they were intimidated by the IRS workers with excessive paperwork and meddling questions. They asked us all sorts of things that were out of the norm. So they received a questionnaire from the IRS with well over 15 questions, including who the group met with, where they held their meetings, who was in attendance, and what the subject of their internal emails were. So he said that this has come out today, this morning, Of the 296 applications for nonprofit status that the Inspector General reviewed, the San Antonio Tea Party was one of the 108 that was approved. Of the others, 28 were withdrawn and 160 were still open. So despite the approval, George Rodriguez says that they required the help of the American Center for Law and Justice. So there was, they had to get somebody else involved in order to make it happen. So for those of you folks who didn't know, the Powerball for tomorrow's drawing is going to be at least $550 million, the third largest lottery jackpot in U.S. history and the second largest in the history of Powerball, and that's of today. So the largest was $587.6 million jackpot, and the largest lottery in the U.S. was $656 million in March of 2012. That was Mega Millions. But the Powerball game is played in 43 states, the District of Columbia, and the U.S. Virgin Islands. A ticket costs $2. So yesterday when it was in the news that nobody won on Wednesday, I emailed my sons because one of them had bought one ticket. And I said, I'm going to buy me five tickets because I have four children and me. So that'll be the lucky number. Where do I go? I've never bought one. I don't know. So one of my sons responded, any gas station. So it's like, okay. So I'm actually going to buy five tickets. I'm going to try and remember to do that today or tomorrow. And I'm sure many of you will also, because who wouldn't want to have the split of $550 million? They're based on payouts as annuities over 30 years, which at my age I'm not going to do. So I would do the cash payout that will be less. And think about, what would you do with your life if you had a couple hundred million dollars in it? There's a lot of things that I know that people say, like, I won't be seeing you on Monday, meaning they would quit their job Saturday night. I wouldn't be one of those. I have missed being on the radio so much that the way I describe it, today ends, by the way, 4 weeks of this incantation or incarnation of the Maria Sanchez show, that I feel like I had lost an arm, didn't know it, and now I've regained it. So it's, my ex used to say, there are people who want to be on the air and there are people who need to be on the air, and I fall into the latter category. So I'm really grateful to LA Talk Radio and Sam Hassan for making this possible here. Announced today, the Cannes Film Festival opened Wednesday, and Chopard Jewels is the official sponsor of the festival and has been for years. $1 million worth of their jewelry has been stolen. Stolen last night from a safe in the Novotel hotel room of a Chopard employee. And Chopard creates the Palme d'Or trophy for the best film in the Cannes competition, as well as the best actor and actress trophies. But this isn't the first time that Chopard has been robbed. In 2009, a gunman stole jewelry worth more than $8 million from a store in Paris in broad daylight. And another robbery, which was not Chopard but was Cartier, that was also in 2009. There were several armed robbers. They stole close to $21 billion from a Cartier shop in Cannes before fleeing on their motorbikes. We mentioned about the Japanese city of Osaka and the mayor's statement earlier this week about how the comfort women, better known as sex slaves, were important to the fighting warriors in World War II. Well, right away, China and South Korea denounced that statement as being insensitive and as an excuse to explain Japanese abuses. The United States has weighed in, and the statement is, Mayor Hashimoto's comments were outrageous and offensive, said State Department spokeswoman Jen Sakai. So the good news is the Japanese government has also sought to distance itself from his comments, which were that the sex slaves were needed to help the warriors cope with the atrocities of war. And finally, El Quebec has made a splash in their cover, which is the May 2013 model. Her name is Justine Legault. She is not only not a size 2, she is a size 14. She's on the cover in all of her glory. And they're saying that she is setting yet another new standard for women's sizes and beauty. So women that worry over the size of your jeans, you need to stop. 2, 4, 6s are not necessarily the norm anymore. We are accepting women with curves. I would say thank you to J-Lo and Beyonce that we allow and accept and celebrate women who actually look like women, not like boys walking down the runways. So Dove's Real Beauty campaign has celebrated women as looking as they should or as they do. As long as you're healthy, what's going on inside is really what matters. What's your blood pressure? What's your cholesterol? What's your triglycerides? All that stuff, that's what's important. And then what's wrapped around it. The belly fat we spoke about yesterday, that's the dangerous one. You need to get rid of that. Yesterday we talked about the fact that your waist needs to be half of what your height is. And that is an indicator for health and for longevity. So the folks that have a waist that's half or less of your height, they lived on average 17 years longer. So that's really what's important. So there's that, and then a new Israeli law that was passed earlier this year forbids their models from working that fall under the body mass index of 18.5. That same law demands that computer-generated changes to make models appear thinner be noted along with the images, in other words, to say enhanced. And this is the greatest statement, I think. We may be able to look forward to a future where a plus-size disclaimer is no longer needed. Instead, a size 14 woman on the cover of a magazine will be called the same thing a size 2 is called, a model. Wouldn't that be something? Good morning. This is Maria Sanchez. You're on the Maria Sanchez Show. Hello?
Hello?
Hi. You're on the Maria Sanchez Show. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. This is Kristen?
This is Kristen.
Kristen, how do you say your last name, please?
Kristen Bichochin.
Bichochin. Thank you so much for calling. Kristen is the executive director of the Amgen Tour and the senior vice president of sports at AEG. And thank you for taking the time to visit with us while the Amgen Tour of California is going on. This is day 6, is that correct?
Correct. And thank you for having us.
You're welcome. So, Kristen, for the first time, again, this is the 8th annual, you have, AEG has been the presenter of the race. Amgen has been the official host, I guess is what you would call them, Amgen Tour?
They are the title sponsor of the event and have been with us since the inception of the race.
But for the first time ever this year, the race went from the south of California to the north, starting in Escondido, which is a community out in the San Diego area. So do you want to let us know why you made the change and what the change has been like for the riders and for the race itself?
Yeah, absolutely. The change has been great for us. Every year since the inception of the race in 2006, we look to change up the route, to change the overall composition. So we listen to the fans, we listen to the riders, we listen to our partners. So number one, we want to change it up from an overall competitive standpoint, but also we want to, you know, continue to showcase, you know, different parts of the state of California. Essentially, the Amgen Tour of California is an international postcard for California. And Escondido, they were the overall finish in 2009. They did a tremendous job. Just the overall support within that community was phenomenal. We knew we had to go back. So they hosted a fantastic overall start this year.
So go through the 12 host city partners, please, also. And if folks aren't from the area or from California, these are California cities, and I'm assuming you're going to announce them from the beginning of Escondido up to the finish to Santa Rosa.
Yeah, absolutely. So we kicked off the Amgen Tour of California this year on Sunday, May 12th in Escondido. Monday, we started in Murrieta and finished in the greater Palm Springs area on the tramway. Those are two new cities for the Amgen Tour of California this year. Day three, we started in Palmdale and finished in Santa Clarita, which are both alumni cities. Then we started in Santa Barbara and then finished in the Avila Beach. And then here we are today for stage 6 with our time trial in San Jose. And San Jose is the only city to be part of the Amgen Tour of California for all eight years. And then tomorrow we will start in Livermore and finish on top of Mount Diablo. And then for day 8, the final day, we will start in San Francisco, go over the Golden Gate Bridge, and finish in Santa Rosa.
And that'll finish around what time?
It will finish, well, on Sunday.
Oh, yes.
On Sunday, we are live on NBC. We will finish a little bit before noon.
So it's live on NBC so people can watch on traditional television?
Absolutely. So from May 12th up until May 18th, we are on NBC Sports Network from 2 to 4 p.m. And the final Sunday, we are live on NBC.
And that covers
10 a.m.
Okay.
to noon.
10 a.m. to noon. And you're referring to Pacific times, correct?
That is Pacific time. And then if you can't catch the actual broadcast on TV, we have a tour tracker, which is on our official website, AmgenTourCalifornia.com, that you can watch the race live for the final 2 hours from 2 to 4.
Now, I understand that the race in its entirety is about 750 miles. How do you,
correct.
Who makes those decisions about where you go, where you stop, when you stop, the lodging, and the welfare of the participants?
Absolutely. I mean, it's certainly a team effort between my staff at AEG and then our operational partner, Medalist Sports, who's been with us since the inception of the race in 2006. So between both teams, we work through all those various details, which there's a lot of details for sure. We travel with 1,000 feet, and like you said, I mean, the riders are racing, you know, approximately 750 miles.
Now, because this is an international professional cycling event, I understand that you are going to, or whomever oversees it, assigns world ranking points to the finishers, the top finishers?
Yeah, so, I mean, the riders that participate in the Amgen Tour of California are the world's best. We have the world champion, Chaubert. We have former world champions. We have Olympians. And this is the one thing to remember, this is an invitation-only race. So we invite all the teams that participate. And the teams that come here, you know, typically utilize the Amgen Tour of California as a platform to prepare themselves for the Tour de France.
So that means that by invitation only, did they have to qualify in some kind of level, or it's just that not everybody, you do not take all comers?
We don't take. We pick who we want to participate in our race.
And how many teams is that, and how many riders is that?
We have a total of 16 teams and 128 riders.
And how does that compare to the Tour de France?
So, well, it's different. I mean, the Tour de France has, you know, the best teams, obviously, in the world participating. But they have more teams than us participating. And then, of course, it's a longer race than the Amgen Tour of California.
And how is it that the Amgen Tour of California started? What's the genesis of it?
So the Amgen Tour of California, the genesis of it is the first year was 2006. Mr. Anschutz, who is the owner of AEG, had a strong passion and just an overall commitment to the sport of cycling. It essentially kicked off when we built, AEG built the indoor velodrome that is located at the Home Depot Center, which is on the campus of Cal State Dominguez Hills. So it kicked off with that investment, and then we always knew that we wanted to have a professional cycling race.
And have you had any drama or any mishaps or any, like, how was the heat when you went through the desert? Because we've had some erratic weather the past week or so in Southern California.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You can never predict the weather, rain or shine. You know, the riders are always prepared for the heat, for the cold, for the rain. These are professional riders, so they're always fully equipped. And rider and public safety are first and foremost to AEG in the overall race.
And Kristen, can you talk about your collaboration with Amgen itself and the philanthropic aspect to the Amgen Tour of California, please?
Sure. At Amgen, we are very fortunate that Amgen is our title sponsor since the inception of the race in 2006. They have been a phenomenal partner, and you know, we're very proud to join Amgen to essentially bring the Break Away from Cancer initiative to light as they help people throughout the 8 days. They really have utilized the Engine Tour of California to showcase and to make sure people know all the resources that are available to people who are affected by cancer.
And I understand that Breakaway from Cancer is a collaboration between Amgen and four other nonprofit organizations. Do you know what those are? Because I didn't see that, the other four. I know Breakaway from Cancer is the website, so I guess it probably has information there.
Yeah. Breakaway from Cancer is definitely the main one. And, you know, we host four breakaway miles throughout the week for cancer survivors. So approximately 100 to 150 people walk essentially the final mile of four of our stages this year.
To
highlight them. So, you know, throughout the entire week, we are doing whatever we can to, you know, make sure that, you know, we're continuing to spread the message and build awareness, of what Amgen is doing to help people.
Kristen, are the walk of the last mile, are any of those available Friday, Saturday, or Sunday?
So there is not. Just due to, I guess, just the overall competitiveness, you know, San Jose, you know, essentially we're finishing uphill. Mount Diablo, we're finishing on a mountaintop. No, we do not. We've already hosted the four at this point.
So you're saying that the last mile is arduous and that probably is not something that a cancer survivor would be well-equipped to do,
right? For the final, actually, we are hosting one in Livermore. So it's actually taking place in the start location and not the finish location because Livermore is obviously flatter. So we are hosting one in Livermore.
And that's tomorrow morning?
That's tomorrow morning, correct.
If somebody's listening and they'd like to avail themselves of that, is it too late?
We do. The registration is closed, but if somebody certainly wants to reach out to us, we're more than happy to accommodate them.
And finally, do you want to talk about the leader jersey? Is that still available to purchase?
It is. The leader jersey is available to purchase, as well as all of our other merchandise. On the Amgen Tour of California website, you can go there and it will bring you to our Amgen Tour of California store. Or if you happen to be on site at one of our stages, we do have merchandise stands at both our start and our finish location.
And what time do you start?
So today, we are going to be starting at 1 o'clock.
Oh, so it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, but the great thing about today is, yes, we start at 1 o'clock, but we are also putting on a professional women's time trial, as well as an amateur time trial. So amateurs have the opportunity to purchase an opportunity to actually ride the official course before the pros.
How fascinating. And what time would that start?
So that will start approximately 12:45 today. So I would recommend if you are coming down to the race today, make sure you get there early. Because it definitely, will get a little bit busy with all the activities that are happening. And, of course, we would love everybody to see everything that's going on.
Kristen, can you say where San Jose is a big place? Do you have specifics?
Yep. It's so it's a time trial today. So it's almost 20 miles. So we are going to be starting on Bailey Street, which is right next to the IBM Center. And then we're going to be finishing on top of Metcalf Road.
Okay. And obviously, if somebody's hearing this, it's Pacific time, and they can get the details from the Amgen Tour of California website.
Correct. This is all Pacific time, and all the information is on the website. If you click under, route and stage details, it will provide you with essentially a profile of what this stage actually looks like, number one. Number two, it'll provide you with some best places to watch the race. It'll provide you with all the details you need to know about each of the stages.
And again, you've got coverage live on NBC on Sunday, the final day, which is May 19th for Stage 8 from 10 in the morning till noon. And the other coverage today and tomorrow is via how?
It's NBC Sports Network.
Okay.
And then you can also watch it on our tour tracker, which is an app on our website at theengineTourofCalifornia.com.
Excellent. Anything else you'd like to add, Kristen?
No, we really appreciate, you know, you taking the time to talk to us today. I mean, the only last thing that I would love to add is that the beauty about the Engine Tour of California is that it's a free event. So there's not many, you know, sporting events, especially the magnitude of the Engine Tour of California, which attracts more than 2 million spectators throughout the course of the week. People can come watch the race for free. And then there's so many other activities that are going on, you know, i.e. the ancillary events that I talked about. There's also a lifestyle festival, which is comprised of over, you know, 60 different booths, whether it's interactive displays, merchandise, concessions. There's really something to do for the overall community, whether you're an avid cyclist or a recreational cyclist, or if you haven't even been on a bike before. It's enjoyable for the entire family.
Well, I'm glad that you took the time. I know that this is the height of the storm for you, and I can hear your voice is a little fatigued.
I know. I'm very sorry. I apologize in advance.
No, please. It actually makes it more compelling that you would do this.
I'm so sorry.
No, please don't. By the way, I use Throat Coat. Have you tried that? It's an herbal tea.
I have something with me right now that I need to take. Yeah, some throw lozenger.
Okay, good. Well, Kristen, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate you making the time to visit with us, especially in the middle of the eye of the storm. And continued success.
Thank you so much.
Good luck. Thank you very much. So Kristen Biochin, she is the executive director of the Amgen Tour of California, as well as the senior vice president of AEG Sports, which is also, they're the presenter, AEG. And AEG, if you have not heard of their name, they're one of the leading sports and entertainment presenters in the world. They own or control a collection of companies, including the Staples Center here in Los Angeles, the Home Depot Center, the Sprint Center, the O2, Nokia Theater LA Live, Best Buy Theater Times Square, sports franchises, including the Los Angeles Kings, the ING Beta Breakers Foot Race, which I have run in twice. I was a student. I graduated. I was an undergrad student at the University of California, Davis, which is located in Northern California. And I've been a runner in my day, but I can't say that I am now. But because they always say, you're going to be an ex-runner. It's just a matter of when. It's either knees or back. But I did that, and it's wild. You go through the streets of San Francisco and the hills, and there's all kinds of people because it's San Francisco and the antics that they do with costumes and groups and everything. It's just crazy. So it's a great fun. So that was AEG. And Amgen, being the title sponsor for all 8 years, is also awesome. They are located mainly in Southern California, and they do wonderful things with their research and their implementation of medicines. So our next guest is Dr. Sneezer, and he's going to be visiting with us about a study that was published yesterday in the Psychological Science Journal. But I have a moment to share with you, because it's Friday and that's the weekend. I'm happy to go tomorrow. A girlfriend of mine is getting married. And one of the things I love about this, they met online. I think it was on Match, but I'm not sure. And hit it off like right away and moved in together, and then they bought a home together earlier this year, and now they're getting married tomorrow. And I would say they're 50-somethings. So I'm always like, oh, isn't that great? Some people are willing to still get up to bat and to swing at the pitches. They still have faith in the system. I love that. I love the institution of marriage. I have made some poor choices with whom I have entered into the institution of marriage. Not that they're bad people, it just didn't work. And that for that, I'm chagrined, because I have 4 children, and my folks have been married for 58 years, and I assumed that was going to be my destiny, and who enters into marriage thinking that it's not going to work. And that's probably one of my greatest sadnesses, is that my children did not grow up in an intact household. They were 2, 4, 6, and 8 when their dad and I divorced. So going to a wedding tomorrow, and it's a casual affair. It's in their backyard. They said resort attire, no heels, because it's going to be in their backyard, no gifts, and just come and celebrate and enjoy with us. I'm thinking, that sounds like fun, right? Well, 3 dates later, I'm going by myself. asked a man a couple weeks ago. He said yes, he pulled out last week. Asked the guy last weekend. He said yes, he pulled out this week. I asked a guy early this week. He said flat out, no, thank you. I'm like, what is so threatening about going to a wedding? Especially a casual Saturday afternoon backyard resort attire wedding. And I've been single for 8 years, and so I date intermittently, off and on. And when I mean date, I mean like date. Like, you know, you go to a movie or you go to dinner. And I have never had anybody live with me, nor have I lived with anybody. I've married the men. So, you know, it's casual, and it's like the next step towards friendship or what have you. And I guess it must just be intimidating or threatening. It's like, okay, so I'm going by myself, which is fine. Because I've been single for the last 8 years, I attend most events by myself or with a girlfriend. Because especially if it's somebody that you're seeing and they don't know all the players involved, and then you're always having to worry about, are they having a good time and bringing them up to speed, and this is so-and-so on the side. Rather not have to do that. I'd rather not put them through that. I'm cool with that. It's okay. So going to the wedding tomorrow is going to be no big deal. But I just find it curious, like, what's so threatening about doing that? It doesn't mean anything. It just means that we could have an afternoon together on the weekend. So we are calling on our live raw radio, Dr. Daniel Sneezer. He's with the University of California in Santa Barbara. Dr. Sneezer?
Yeah, hi, Maria.
Hi.
Glad to be on your show.
Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you for taking the time to visit with us and to share what it is that you found out and why you thought to investigate it in the first hand. And I'm going to make one sentence, and then I'll let you go from there. But the summation that I understand is that you have discovered that men who are physically strong are more apt to take a right-wing political stance, as opposed to weaker men are inclined to support the welfare system or the welfare state.
Well, yeah, so there's a qualification to that summary. In that, actually, what we found was that strength, so to speak, exacerbates men's willingness to assert their own self-interest. And so what that means is that for men of high socioeconomic status, the stronger they are, the more they oppose redistribution, as if their own strengths allow them to better defend the resources that they have. And on the other hand, for men of low socioeconomic status, poor men, the stronger they are, the more they are willing to support or endorse redistributive policies, as if their own strengths allow them to better or more effectively claim other people's resources.
Is that a socioeconomic statement then?
It's a combination of socioeconomic status and strength. It's not a straightforward effect of strength, but rather a combination of socioeconomic status and strength. So it's strength makes an effect on your political attitudes, but that depends on where you are in the economic ladder, so to speak.
And how do you define strength? And I might add that I understand that you studied hundreds of people in the United States, Argentina, and Denmark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right,
so
that's correct.
So it's you had three countries that you involved, and you collected data on men or on your subjects, and how do you define strength?
The U.S. and Argentina samples were gathered at the lab, and so we went and measure people's strength by measuring their flexed biceps. The measure of the bicep is a very good proxy for lifting strength, the Denmark sample was gathered over the web, and so we gave subjects instructions on how to measure their own biceps, and they reported that those measures.
And how did you choose the United States, Argentina, and Denmark to pool?
So I'm working currently in the United States, so that was a convenient sample. I originally am from Argentina, so I traveled there in the boreal summer, and I collected data, and my collaborator is from Denmark, so Michael Peterson. And so he recruited a nationally representative sample of Danish people over the world.
Okay, so before you collected the data, how did you decide what it is that you were going to study and why?
So on the one hand, we are very interested in understanding how people think about politics, so that was part of our motivation. On the other hand, our lab has been working with models of animal conflict, and in the world of animal conflict, the fighting ability of an animal quite strongly determines the extent to which that animal will end up getting a resource. The thing to notice is that stronger animals are more likely to defend or claim resources from others. Physically weaker animals are more likely not only to lose resources to others, but also to get injured in fights and so on. And so from ecologically rational or functional perspective, if you're strong, it's better to claim it's an error perhaps not to take what others have or not to defend your own resources. If you're weak, it's an error to claim from others or to defend what you cannot defend cost effectively. And so this is what is found in the animal kingdom. This happens in invertebrates, in insects, in vertebrates, in non-human primates. It's a very widespread fact of the animal world. And so we thought that we humans are heirs of this evolutionary regime, and so therefore perhaps this fact should also be true of humans. And one of our collaborators, Aaron Sell, found in the past that stronger males are more willing to, they are quicker to anger, they are more successful at interpersonal conflict, and also they are more willing to endorse a military route to international conflict as opposed to perhaps appeasement or a more diplomatic solution. And it's important to note here that there is no logical link between a person's own upper body strength and the extent, the likelihood of the American military, for example, to win a confrontation with other countries in the present. However, in the past, in the small-scale forager bands where we evolved, much smaller population size, no firearms, and so the size of your own biceps would have determined to some extent the odds of your coalition to win in a confrontation. So that's what he found in the context of warfare. And we kind of extended or looked for signatures of strength in the domain of arguments over redistribution, which is a kind of within society conflict more than a between society conflict. And we found that. We found the signature of strength among males, but not among females. Males being the six that where aggressive confrontation takes place, typically in mammals. And we found this in three countries, also in the U.S., Denmark, and Argentina, like you said.
So what I don't think I understand is if you were talking about wealthy strong men and wealthy strong men and not as wealthy strong men, they both tend to have the same wanting to not distribute?
The way to summarize that would be to say that strong men are more likely to defend their own self-interest, and what counts as self-interest changes as a function of where you are economically. If you have a lot of resources, the self-interest perhaps is defending those resources. So among high SES men, strength makes you oppose redistribution more strongly than if you were wealthy but low strength, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, self-interest when you are poor, low resources might be to claim other people's resources. So here at low SES, strength positively correlates with support for redistribution. Or in other words, stronger low SES males are more likely to want redistribution than low SES but weak men.
So the strength is what defines their self-interest, whether they are affluent or not?
Well, so on the one hand, there's some research, there's quite a bit of research actually showing that taller, stronger men they're more likely to win presidential elections,
mm-hmm.
and they're more likely to have higher SES. On the other, it's been documented that strength is correlated with success in conflict, or at least with resource accruing capacity. The other thing that you mentioned is that, so strength doesn't fully explain this effect. So strength accounts for about 10% of the, or 5 to 10% of the variation in this effect. So it's not like it's the only determining factor of strength. There's other factors that we are currently investigating.
So I would imagine that strength also correlates with testosterone and testosterone levels. Do you check those?
Yeah, so testosterone has relationships with aggression and those kind of variables. In some analyses, strength is the better predictor, but testosterone is also correlated with this syndrome of aggressive self-assertion.
So whatever author distilled your study, I believe, has done it a disservice, because their opening statement says that men who are physically strong are more likely to take a right-wing political stance, while weaker men are inclined to support the welfare state. But that's not what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been looking at the press reports, and some of them were inaccurate, and perhaps, I don't know, it's a simple story, but reality is sometimes more complex than simple lines, but yeah.
Well,
our finding is about a modulated kind of two-factor model in explaining these attitudes, strength, but also as a function of where you are in the economic ladder.
Yeah, which goes to show you that how the news that we get gets distilled by human beings who are subject to error. So somebody read what you wrote and probably put it through their filter to have it support what their own personal agenda may have been.
Yes, human nature is fallible.
Yeah. So tell me, Dr. Sneezer, if you see that it's being misrepresented, do you then issue something else and say, no, that's not what we meant? What we found is this.
I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do with the press, but I don't know how these things work very well. So we have discussions in the scientific community, and like I say, it's important that the public understands accurately what's going on. Perhaps.
Now, when you set out upon this journey, what was your hypothesis similar to what you actually ended up discovering, or was this revelations?
Yeah. We predicted this effect in advance, but we were surprised. Actually, we were positively surprised that we found this effect so robustly across the three countries, and specifically among males. So it was a very nice confirmation of what we suspected in the first place.
Because it sounds to me like strength empowers people to act upon their convictions more than weakness.
That's what the data show.
Right. So it doesn't have to be right wing or liberal, and it doesn't have to be independent versus welfare. It emboldens and empowers the person who has the strength to follow through on what their morals, values, and beliefs are.
Exactly. So the strength effect occurs not only at the high ACS end of the spectrum, but like you say, also at the lower end or with other non-conservative ideologies. Look at is the, for example, the iconography of social movements or labor unions are about strength. I collected some pictures of the labor unions, their slogans or their iconography. And what you see is images of strength, physical strength, but also strength in numbers. That's one way humans have strength, not just by their interpersonal displays of physical dominance, but also by aggregating with other human beings, multiplying their strength. There's also a lot of imagery of weaponry in some cases. And so all these symbols suggest that if you are low resource, you are claiming, you are hoping to get more resources. The imagery, or the iconography of strength is it's interesting that it goes in the same direction as what we found.
Huh, very interesting. Dr. Sneezer, thank you so much for making yourself available this morning. I appreciate your time.
thank you for having me on your show.
You're welcome, and good luck with that press. So that's a first-hand example about what you read might not actually be what is the truth. And I believe we've shared that before. When I first, one of my favorite incarnations with my career was a morning radio program. We were live on the air from 6 to 9 a.m. every morning. So in those days, I used to get up at 3 in the morning and do the prep and get the same story, sometimes from three different sources, because I always do check. I check an outside the United States source, usually Reuters. I check an inside aggregator, usually Drudge. Then I check more of a mainstream one, say, who doesn't seem to have as much of an agenda, say, ABC, NBC, CBS, something like that. And then I check the partisan ones, Fox and CNN, which I consider them to have some kind of influence. So the same story would have three different versions of it. And that's when I realized, like, huh, just because you hear the story doesn't mean that that's what it is. So Dr. Sneezer just proved that live and on the air, that the distillation of the study that was published in the Journal of Psychological Science is not what they discovered. So we got to hear that firsthand. I kept trying to wrap my head around what he was saying. So the way that I'm summarizing what he said is, strength empowers us to act upon our convictions and our passions, whatever they may be. So if you are liberal, then you're going to act upon that. If you're conservative, then you're going to act upon that. But strength is the common denominator about people who actually pursue their passions in that regard. Okay, so now that we got that straight, yesterday we had our first visit from our pet correspondent, Nina. I've been remiss. I'm going to get it up on the site. We've got, I don't know how many correspondents, at least a dozen and a half, that visit with us when their field of expertise is in the news. So next week, the astrological signs change around the 21st to the 23rd. So we'll have a visit from our astrosexologist, Kiki T, who's the only one in the world. And she'll talk about that at the end of the month. So at the beginning of each month, we visit with our Word of the Month correspondent, who is the editor at Merriam-Webster.com. And they get, I think it's 100 million hits. It's a billion and a half hits a year. So he talks to us about the words of the month, that sort of thing. So yesterday we had our pet correspondent on the program, Nina Rubin, and had a conversation about that. And then she spoke about some of the studies that have just come out recently about how pets actually do help your health and your well-being and lower your blood pressure and your cholesterol and all that. So I've got two girlfriends involved with kitten stories or kitty stories. One, and they're both dear friends of mine, one, her cat suddenly took ill this week and she took it to the vet and they don't know and they have to, she's almost $600 into it. And so she brings the cat home last night and we spoke yesterday and she said, you know, your pet correspondent was so right, because when I come home, when she's got a dog and a cat, that helps her feel not so alone, because her 18-year-old son just shipped off to the Marines earlier this month, and she's home alone for the first time. And if you know what that's like, you know how different it is. And the cat and the dog have helped her with that. And then I have another girlfriend who is fostering a mommy cat and the four babies who were abandoned and discovered. And at the time, the kittens were 2 weeks old, and now they're 4 weeks old. And when they're 8 weeks old, they'll be available for adoption. And she says she is just having the best time taking... She doesn't have to bottle feed them because the mom's around and they're nursing from the mother. But, of course, she has to make sure they're safe and that they're, you know, learning how to be litter box trained and all that sort of thing. But here are these sweet souls. And my daughter also, as I mentioned yesterday... She rescued a cat that has medical issues, and it has to do with her sinus and her eyes, and so she has to put in drops, and she has to wipe the eyes and all this sort of stuff. So we've got angels on earth helping in that regard, and that's one of the things that we like to do, is to help to promote rescuing and adoption before you consider a breeder and, worst of all, a pet store or puppy mill, because that's atrocious. If you don't know about that, find out about it, because what they do to those dogs in captivity, as Nina explained yesterday, is keep them in cages and stack them one atop another like they do with chickens, and just mate them for litters twice a year. They end up losing their teeth and everything else. It's just horrific what they do. So looking forward to visiting with you on Monday. Thank you so much for joining us. I hope you have a fabulous weekend. I'll let you know about the wedding. Congratulations, Patty and Bob. And so sorry that it's so intimidating to the men that have been in my life. I really just was like, here's an afternoon. We can go and have some fun. Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show. Have a great day and a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Maria Sanchez Show on LA Talk Radio and MariaSanchezShow.com. Live every weekday morning, 9 a.m. Pacific, and on the net at LATalkRadio.com and MariaSanchezShow.com.